are back with episode 725 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and if we didn't have things to adapt from, how would we ever think of a show to do?
That's right, and I gotta say, I'm very thankful. Is that the word I want to use for the 2015-2016 season to give us so much to talk about? Because, yeah, we have some more material to fill out another episode. So, yes, one of the things that I neglected as I was putting together my show notes for this week, with all of the other things going on, was the fact that we are still continuing our recap of that season this past 12 months or so. So, yeah, we're going to be getting into that. And before we do any of that, though, Edmund, please give a disclaimer.
Absolutely. We might discuss just about anything that happened on these seasons. So even though they were a long time ago, do not listen if you haven't watched and caught up.
That is right. And yes, we're going to be starting off here with the shows that were in the number 31 to 40 slot, or chunk, as we say. So we did get through shows 41 through 61, 62. So now we are 31 through 40. And these are the shows that are coming in just about at the above average range. So a little bit below, a little bit above. But they are all in that starting to get to that elite status, as we say. So one of the other things about this particular batch of episodes is that all of these shows have been effectively renewed.
Yes, in one form or another. Yes,
in one form or another. So all of these shows in the middle of the pack really have been renewed.
Yeah,
and something to think about when we get to our top 10. Yeah, I'm just saying.
Yeah, and also interesting that there are a lot of first seasons in this batch as well. So
yes, indeed,
shows that started out and were gifted with a second season.
That's right. Okay, so we are going to start off here with our number 40 slot, coming in at an average of 7.82. We have the first season of Sense8. And I'll admit I saw the first, say, 6 episodes, and then it dropped off for me just because of timing. I then saw the rest of them much later, so I don't have that cohesive feel of that first season that perhaps you do, Edmund.
The interesting thing about this show, certainly this is the after me making my quip about adaptations, I mean, this is the one show that absolutely was completely original, the collaboration between J. Michael Straczynski and the Wachowskis, and this first season certainly had that burden, in a way, of almost like pilotitis all the way through, as they had to establish this whole concept of the 8 different members of the interactive cell and they're discovering each other also the forces arrayed against them. So you know there was a lot of ground to cover. It was a little uneven at times, but I think certainly by the end of the season it found its footing, and I'm quite intrigued to see where they can build on that for season 2.
Yeah, I really am quite intrigued. I know that there's been a little bit of a shift in the background in terms of production and stuff, but I don't know that that's going to radically change the direction of the series itself.
Yeah, I would highly doubt it. Yeah, I mean, certainly given the storytelling force of the people involved, even though some things have shifted in terms of responsibilities, but I think the overall is still going to be similar to and just continuing on from season 1.
Yes. And that should be soonish, I thought, the second season. I don't know that there's a date, right? I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't think it's been officially announced. I mean, they are in production, if I remember correctly. So, depending on exactly where they are with that, I think it's sometime later this year.
Okay, so that brings us to our number 39 show for the year, and that was the second season of Salem. Now, this one came in at an average of 7.83, which was, in fact, about 0.2 of a point drop from the first season. Still, it was renewed for a third season, as we mentioned. Now, Edmund, your recollection of, for me, a 0.2 of a point difference is not entirely huge, but I do feel like there was a little bit less cohesiveness to this season as opposed to the first.
Yeah, I mean, certainly that first season, which was very much one of those catching lightning in a bottle moments of this show that was kind of taking some of the, you know, the supernatural elements which have been so popular in recent years, but then very much embracing over the top and campy with it. And I think that worked very well in the first season. Second season, they had a little touch of the sophomore slump, certainly, you know, but having to shift from sort of the machinations within Salem to bringing Lucy Lawless in as the big bad witch to vie against, it shifted some of the dynamics, and not necessarily in a good way. So I'll be interested to see if they maybe shift back to those internal politics more in season three.
Yes, where they take things differently in season three will be a point of speculation, I'm sure. I've been pleasantly surprised by this show. I don't want to speculate too much because I'm definitely going to be wrong. But that's one of the things I really like about the show, is that it really brings about as much of the horror aspect to the proceedings as one would expect from a cable show like American Horror Story was doing, and it seems mm-hmm. to have slipped a little bit with. So
yeah, definitely.
Okay, right. So next we have, in slot number 38, season 10, air quotes 10, of The X-Files, coming in at an average of 7.86. And I say also in air quotes renewed,
mm-hmm.
because it hasn't been officially renewed.
No.
Everybody intends to come back to do it
mm-hmm.
from the network, production, Chris Carter, the cast. One of those things I wish would not come back, but okay. We'll get into that in a moment. But it's ostensibly renewed. We know that they're going to want to do it again. Maybe not next year, but maybe the year after.
Yep.
They kind of put their tack on the calendar.
Yeah, they kind of have that Sherlock problem of, you know, yes, when can we free up all of these people to actually do this?
That is exactly it. Now, what I'm surprised by here is, or maybe I shouldn't be, but what we have happening here is that it was a short run, 6 episodes, 3 of which were mythology episodes and 3 of which were more standalone.
Yes.
I think if we were to look at the math, the mythology episodes were well below the average mm-hmm. for the season, and the others were well above. So even though
necessarily be a surprise.
Right. Especially considering who wrote the mythology episodes.
Yes.
What I'm surprised at is not that it fell out that way. What I'm surprised by is that the average then turned out to be as high as it did.
Mm-hmm.
The last episode left such a bad taste in my mouth that I really feel like a point should just be lobbed right off of this one. But that would not be fair. Yeah. That's not how we do things.
Mm-hmm.
So this one did fall into the middle of the pack because it had some excellent episodes and it had some real clunkers. Maybe someone else should be in charge of the show going forward. Just saying,
yeah. Might be an idea.
Yes. But what, of course, that means is that we are going to hear some shows being part of this list that we're going to be surprised that they came in roughly the same place as The X-Files, because the memory of The X-Files season 10 was not very good.
No.
But there we are. An example would be coming in at an average of 7.88, barely above The X-Files, would be the first season of Humans. Of course, renewed. And it's in slot 37. I remember this fondly from last summer.
Yes.
I kind of wish that the second season was right now.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that it was far more layered than I was expecting it to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I had the issue with this, where this is another of those remakes. This is actually done as a Swedish series. They did 2 series over there, I was in one of those situations where I was finding this adaptation, even though I I can see what you're saying, John, in terms of given the basic premise of the show, that it did wind up being more layered than you might have expected, but it actually was not as layered as the Swedish version. So I was in one of these situations of, you know, no, it's good, it's just not quite as good as it could have been. but I still enjoyed it, and given the fact that the even though there have been calls for people wanting them to do another series or two of the Swedish version, that one does look dead in the water. So I am intrigued to see how they might continue it in the British worldview of things, because in the Swedish version, the second series was quite wonderful, but it got very off the wall and bizarre at times. So I suspect they're not going to do quite as direct an adaptation of series two as they did for series one.
Next on the list, coming in at number... I keep on hitting the wrong tab again. I need to stop that. Coming in at number 36, the first season of Legends of Tomorrow, coming in at an average of 7.89. Now, I just mentally see humans and Legends of Tomorrow being separated by a hundredth of a point, and
yes,
I'm perplexed. But that said, I mean, there is a slight little bit of bias, perhaps, on Mr. Gary's part. That maybe elevates it slightly, but I do have to also agree that we did enjoy the character of Leonard Snart so much.
Absolutely.
That we in fact also really enjoyed some of the episodes. Even if it was an uneven season, I can't exactly say that it was a bad one. It was just a typical, perhaps, first season that was lower than what we had come to expect of the strong starts of Arrow and The Flash.
Although at the same time, I mean, I remember, I mean, particularly with Arrow, I mean, there was those elements of inconsistency. I mean, with Arrow is particularly in the sort of personal relationship stuff, where it felt like it was getting you know, there were times when there was too much sort of the cliche, and not even necessarily that accurate, of the CW as where they do all that angsty teen relationship stuff. You know, there was actually, you know, a bit of a history of the DCW shows coming out with strong elements, but with stuff that still needs work. So I think Legends of Tomorrow did kind of slip into that template as well.
That's true. I will say this for the comparison between the first season of Arrow and the first season of Legends of Tomorrow: Arrow had more episodes to play with,
right,
and that therefore more ability to compensate for that early unevenness. I think maybe it found its footing, as I recall us saying way back when, maybe within the first 10 episodes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Then Arrow had, you know, say another 12 to go.
Right. That's true.
So, yeah. Next on the list, coming in at number 35, Killjoys season 1, coming in at an average of 7.99. So pretty much right on that above average mark.
Yeah.
And of course, it has been renewed, as we are right now, just about halfway through the second season. A 10-episode season, I hasten to remind the audience, versus the 13 that Dark Matter got and, in my opinion, squandered.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, it was lower on the list, remember. The numbers do not lie. Killjoys, however, coming in very strong in a first season, right around the above-average 8 mark.
Yes.
I thought that it was just... It was and is a show that has a... that kind of wears its low-budget stylings as a badge of pride.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And they make it work.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And you know, interesting mix of the way they handled episodic versus mythology parts. I mean, this whole idea of taking bounty hunters, which of course has been a staple of reality TV in the last decade or so, and so you've got your automatic warrants as a case of the week, and then but then at the same time as they've really started going into in the second season, being able to take those mysteries from their past, which is a staple of this sort of show, of course, but really twist that and turn it into some interesting stuff behind the scenes to keep you going, along with the action and the flirting and repartee.
Absolutely. I'll also say, let's bring this right down to the lowest common denominator, Edmund. Dutch got everyone's attention right off the bat.
Oh, absolutely.
So, and then they built story on top of it. what was I talking about last time? Anime, fan service, plot? Anyway.
Yes, yeah. Well, yeah.
I will say
Dutch in slow motion in the ball gown in the hallway. That's all I need to say.
It's like the best Clue game ever. Well, but I also have to, I hasten to add that they do manage to show off her male co-stars for the female part of the audience.
Yes. They are equal opportunity lectures.
As it should be.
Somebody once said, yes.
All right. Next on our list in number 34 is the third season of The Originals, coming in at an 8. That is a 200th of a point improvement over season 2. I think we can just say that the show is incredibly consistent.
Yes, indeed.
I would agree. One thing that I really enjoy about this show in its last couple seasons is that they managed to take some of the more confusing elements of conspiracy and constant empire building and crumbling and simplify it to the point where you can watch the episodes and not get completely lost. This third season, they set the stage right at the beginning of it being the fall of the Michelsons, and then they delivered on that, as they should. It worked out really well. I enjoyed this season a lot, and to me, they really should have just let the Vampire Diaries fade away and stuck with putting all their time and energy into the Originals, and it looks like that's what they're going to be doing as they go into this next season. Although, I believe both the Vampire Diaries and the Originals are going to be getting shortened seasons, as we all speculated that would be the case, given that the CW portfolio next season is immense.
Yes, indeed.
They renewed everything for shorter seasons, as we thought. Speaking of the CW and a show that will not be getting a shortened season, from what I understand, also coming in at a dead solid 8. That's right. Right on target. Number 33, fourth season of Arrow. But I must add, that is a 2/10 of a point reduction.
Yes.
And I would say they're lucky they got that little bit of a reduction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because certainly, I mean, you know, this whole season with the attempt to bring in the supernatural and Damien Dark as the big bad, and the little cameo by Constantine, just to tease us, it just really wound up being that for a show that I was worried about this anyway, but for a show that tried to be the sort of grittier, more realistic part of the DCW, introducing those magic elements just never really felt comfortable, and it didn't help that wound up making the flashbacks completely superfluous and nonsensical this season.
Yeah, I sat there and said it's a 2/10 of a point reduction, but that's keeping in mind that the third season was a bit of a drop from the second season. Yes. So we're seeing that it is a progression.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next on the list at number 32 is the fifth season of Grimm, coming in at an average of 8.01, and that is a 0.36 improvement on the previous season. It like fell right in the part where I couldn't do that in a nice little summary. Anyway, I completely agree that this was the best season of Grimm yet, and I'm happy to know that it was renewed for a sixth season. Shortened sixth season.
But still.
Like so many of these.
Yep.
But still, yes. It is coming back, which I'm very happy about. Okay, and then that means we can kind of hit our midpoint of the show with, predictably, our number 31 show on the list, and that is the first season of Man in the High Castle, coming in at 8.02. So right about, again, the above average mark. And Edmund, your recollection of the strengths of this particular show.
Yeah, well, this is another case where I mean, unlike Humans, it wasn't that I had seen the previous version, but I did reread the book shortly before the adaptation premiered, and I know for me, I thought they did a very good job on certain elements. I mean, certainly the, you know, establishing the Nazi world on the East Coast and the Japanese world on the West Coast, and the differences between the two. 2. I thought they did particularly well. I thought the way they Rufus Sewell's character, who was sort of expanded in terms of what you see in the book. I mean, certainly showing the strange adaptations of American suburban life to Nazi dictates was quite well done. But this is a case of being so familiar with the source material. I was one of those who, when they went for the what I consider the cliched trope of the man in the high castle actually being the aging Hitler, which was speculated on but never actually the case in the book. I thought they portrayed it reasonably well, but it was just still something that I couldn't quite wrap my head around and accept. But ironically, in terms of what they were then doing on the West Coast and with the San Francisco and Japanese side of the story, I was rather intrigued with a little twist. So certainly I am very interested to see where they push it through to from here.
Yes, indeed, I'm really looking forward to season 2. As you said, it's going to have to push into some new territory, and that's always exciting.
Yeah,
I know that Frank Spotnitz is no longer in the showrunner role, but I think a lot of the rest of the production staff is still intact.
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so we are right in the midpoint here. What I think we're going to do then is take a quick break, and then we'll come back for the second half of the show and do shows 21 through 30. So until we come back. Yeah, I decided to throw in some of the opening theme music to one of those anime shows that I was watching that I mentioned last time, because they are really getting good at opening theme music.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Well, we're going to go ahead, as I said, and go through shows 21 through 30 of our 2015 to 2016 recap. And that means we are starting here with, in the number 30 slot, at an average of 8.03, season 2 of The Last Ship. That was roughly a 1/10 of a point improvement on the previous season. And of course, it was renewed for season 3. That is currently getting close to wrapping up. But what are your I know this was last summer, so we're going back a little
bit. Oh, mention that the moment it popped up, I was able to immediately get a sense of the season in my head, which is always a good sign. But with this, I mean, certainly the expansion from the first season and the whole finding the cure, but of course then there has to be a complication and making it this concept of the people who are immune to the disease and trying to preserve their position of power and thwart the cure. I thought was a particularly tense intriguing way of approaching this, and sort of still have rogue military element that they have to battle, and then pulling the season into at least this given the recent episodes we reviewed, this attempt to restore the presidency. But yeah, and interesting in terms of the ways they were building on the original premise, and but still keeping it realistic in terms of the way that military men in this position would see their responsibilities and what it was that they should be pushing for in the long term.
Okay, next on the list, coming in at number 29. Unfortunately, we have now encountered a show that has been canceled.
Yes, the red egg suddenly starts to appear.
Yes, though in this case, I believe it was one of those situations where creatively, financially, all of that came together to say, this is the right place to stop.
Yeah. Although this was one of those funny cases of where it had not been announced when the final episode aired, except that whole closing montage was about as close as I've ever seen anybody come to saying, yeah, guys, we're pretty sure this is the series finale, even though we haven't been told yet.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I'm getting at here. It's like, yeah, they could have continued, but boy, did they make a case that it was the end.
Yes.
Defiance, season 3. And perhaps the most important part of that is it was a huge jump.
Oh, absolutely.
From the second season to the third, the quality went up. Obviously, the average was around 8.04, two-thirds of a point improvement. So going out on a high note.
Absolutely.
Lots of mythology for the series all kind of coming together at once, which that's what I like to see. That's what we liked. I think the other side of this particular situation is that the game that was related to the show never really took off.
No.
It had a following for a couple of years, but then it started to fade. So some of the impetus that might have kept the show going longer in terms of a constant stream of new content and new scenarios and so forth, as that disappeared, there wasn't as much of a drive for the show. Because I really believe that one was, in a certain sense, funding the other. So if the game had continued to flourish, there might have been more money to then funnel back towards the show, which in turn would have continued to advertise for the game. That synergy did not exist really in the third season, as far as I could see.
No. And honestly, I mean, thinking about that scenario, I mean, I almost feel like it may have helped the show in that third season not to be also tied to the game, because I could see if you're having to mesh to the game content, which of course it's in its best interest to keep the game going, things could get a little too static as far as the plotting and storytelling goes.
All right, coming in at position number 28 is the first season of Into the Badlands, coming in at an average of 8.07. And that was recently even renewed. I believe that it took a long time for them to get around to renewing that one. But this was stylistically something that I don't think is like much else on this list.
No. Certainly anybody familiar with Hong Kong Kung Fu movies and wire work was certainly looking forward to this. And I think certainly all of those elements they pulled off rather well. And actually, I'm finding it intriguing coming back to this now that we are in the midst of this run by Preacher, because Into the Badlands, now in retrospect and compared to Preacher, feels like a show that was sort of wearing its stylized campy hard on its sleeve, but actually doing a much better job of actually presenting a quirky world that you could actually follow and perhaps even at least be intrigued, if not care about the characters involved.
Yes, I'm looking forward to where things evolve into the second season, because it was a short first season, as I recall.
Yes, it was. Yeah, definitely one of those preludes and set everything up, and now they're looking to expand beyond that base.
Okay, coming in at number 27, at an average of 8.08. We have Series 9 of Doctor Who, and this was a third of a point improvement over Season 8. I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
In fact, I'm kind of surprised it wasn't even a bigger jump. I thought that Series 9 was one of the most cohesive seasons since Matt Smith's first season.
Yeah, definitely, and certainly, I mean, as well, of course, I mean, it was also a case of a season that had a extremely strong close after the on again off again of Clara's departure in the previous series, which I think did hamper that series. This time around, we knew she was definitely going to go, and they certainly made it memorable. I mean, both with the initial death, and the way they had set up that situation and played on the sort of creeping arrogance, and it all coming back to bite her, and then of course the doctor's reaction to all of that, which just gave Capaldi a fabulous showcase for two straight episodes.
Yeah, those last couple episodes were a tour de force as far as that was concerned. Now, kind of an oddity here because of how I have to phrase it. Number 26, we have Jonathan Strange and Mr. Worrell. Season one, technically.
Yes.
Came in at an average of 8.11, and I do have air quotes, canceled.
Yes.
But technically, it was a miniseries.
it's the whole thing that, you know. Well, I was wondering about this at the time, and I did do a little bit of research. Although it didn't take long to uncover this, but I was aware that because I was actually concurrent with, and then I did subsequently finish it after I'd finished watching the series. You know, I'd read the Hugo winning book on which it was based, and I know there had always been calls for sequels and continuations in that world, but it turns out that the author has just never managed to actually get around to writing the sequel. So presumably, if that does happen, I'm sure they'll be happy to do an adaptation of it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. I didn't read the book, so I can't say what kind of adaptation it was, but what I can say is that the miniseries itself was extremely watchable.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, coming in at the 25th slot here, or the 25th slot, is the third season, just finished, of Turn, coming in at an average of 8.13, which was a nice tick up from season two. It is one of the few shows here on the list where I have to put its status as to be determined.
Yes.
And I kind of hate that it is to be determined.
Oh, I know.
Although you did make a pretty good case that the show was kind of perhaps coming to its conclusion in the third season.
It seemed that this is definitely a case of the producers, because I think it was a little touch and go whether they're even going to get the third season. So they certainly had this self-contained story of Benedict Arnold, and as it turned out, perhaps even more the story of John Andre, so certainly relatively self-contained, and they did bring things to a head with that finale, but it really felt like a situation where they have all sorts of options. If they do come back, they in a way they've kind of wound up the Setauket part of the story, so they could even potentially just go in a completely different direction, and this was the end of the Culper Ring, and then they go on to whatever succeeded the Culper Ring.
Yeah, I do think there's still historically some aspects and some moments that haven't been covered, but
yes.
Yeah,
certainly. It was nice to see them have a series where they did acknowledge their situation and brought it to a point where if this is the series finale, I'm perfectly happy with what we saw. But certainly what we've seen has been good enough for it to continue.
Mm-hmm. Next on the list, coming in at number 24, is the fourth season of Orphan Black with an average of 8.14. And this, again, just recently, or no, this was actually the previous one, right? No?
No,
this is the one that just wrapped up?
Yes.
The one that just wrapped up.
I believe so.
And yeah, this was an improvement over season three. And I would agree with that again. We had a much tighter plotting this time.
Mm-hmm. And also the welcome return of focus to the Clone Club and shunting the whole caster subplot off to the side and off into a single anomalous supporting character, as it turned out.
Yeah, I would agree that. I think, though, that they really went back to basics at the beginning of the season, and that's what's that really set the tone and helped them get back on track.
Yes. Yeah. And also, I mean, I'm also getting more and more amused at the way they find ways of, utilizing Tatiana Maslany, you know, but not always in the same way. I mean, so, you know, up until now, it's always been introducing, you know, yet another clone variant for her to betray. And but this time around, by actually going back to the early days of Beth and showing us Beth before stepping in front of the train, I thought was a wonderful way of expanding on the Maslany legacy here, but in ways that were a nice little variant on what they've been doing before.
Next on the list, coming in at number 23, we have, with an average of 8.15, the first season of Supergirl. So we have a first season, again, coming in pretty high, above average. Of course, it's been renewed on the CW, that little twist there, going from one network to the other, yes. Probably where it should have been in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, you know, obviously, maybe the surprise here is that a show that was wearing a little bit of its earnestness and cheesiness on its sleeve still managed to get up there into the higher echelon here, at least above the 8 mark.
I think to a certain extent it was a matter of building on this progression they've had going from Flash to from Arrow to Flash, getting a little more optimistic, a little more comic bookish, and then Supergirl kind of finished off that flip into a more upbeat, more sort of family friendly atmosphere, which certainly at the time it seemed, it makes sense, with them being on good old CBS and the more sort of conventional and staid network, but at the same time, I mean, I think it also it's also a question of given the different material and the different attitudes towards the material, that it makes sense that you'd have that sort of progression, and now sort of across these DCW shows, a variety in the way they approach things, even though they all ostensibly exist in the same universe or parallel universes or whatever they're doing with Flashpoint and all of that.
Yeah, how that's going to play into the overall DCW crossover, yeah, still not there. Let's see. Coming in at number 22, we have the first season of The Magicians, also coming in at an 8.15. And I know I was the one who carried that particular baton,
yes,
this time around, but I have to say, there's a show from sci-fi to binge watch during this later half of the summer, that's not a bad one to give a shot to. There really are a lot of great things about that series, and I would love to see it continue to flourish.
Yeah, that is one I am considering for one of my summer catch-ups.
Yeah, that would be a good one. So, yes, good story, and from what I understand, it's a fairly good adaptation of the books, too. And that brings us to number 21, which is the first season of Mr. Robot, coming in at an average of 8.19. And,
yes,
of course, that has been renewed. Of course, we're watching that
playing
now.
Playing out right now, yes.
Yes. Edmund, your recollections of season one?
Oh, well, I mean, this was certainly one of the revelations of last year in TV. Certainly one of the breakout shows in terms of taking a very intriguing concept, a very complex concept, and playing it out on a network that had been known for far lighter fare. A very intriguing change of pace, and certainly adoption of a more cinematic style, just in the opening credits. But then a fascinating exploration of how twisted some people's heads can get, whether inside their own mind or just inside the corporate and other worlds that they've created for themselves.
I loved the character of Elliot. Everything that they brought to the table with his characterization. And yeah, the approach of this show, granted, it was easy enough to predict where that twist was going to go. I think yeah. Bronstam at the time picked it out maybe in like the first two or three episodes.
Oh, sure. Yeah, but at the same time, you know, there was one thing I loved was the contrast between what was happening in Mr. Robot to the infamous Edward James Olmos season of Dexter, where everybody realized he was a figment of the imagination almost immediately. Nobody was fooled. It just made the whole thing seem ridiculous. Whereas here, even if you were starting to suspect it early on, it completely rewarded you in terms of the way it the clues that were being dropped and the ways you could then see the way they were molding this whole thing around that eventual revelation, and of course further familial ones to come as they spooled it out.
Exactly. Yeah, this second season is definitely layering on top of the first, and so really, really interested in seeing, since that is supposed to be, the first season was supposed to be the first act, where does it go from here? All right, and that is it, I think. We're going to go ahead and wrap this up here. That leaves us with the top 20 shows to still go through, and there are a lot of good titles here along the way.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time. Watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.